Hello everybody, and welcome to our Lunch and Learn on Operational Resilience. Hopefully you've got something nice with you so that you literally can lunch and learn. Our presenters today won't be lunching while they're speaking, which you'll all be very relieved to hear. So this session is about operational resilience. It's something that we've been asked about a lot at FSCom, and we're very pleased to be able to talk about it with you now and answer some of the questions. Some of you have posed questions already, and thank you very much for that. And but if you have questions that arise during the discussions, please do pop them into the chat facility, and then we'll answer them as we go along. So first things first, we, as you have heard, we are recording this, and so cameras are off and the microphones are off, but the good news is that you'll be able to see the video again if you need to. It'll be available on our website very shortly after the session has finished. FSCom is a boutique compliance consultancy specialising in payment services and e-money, and we have a brilliant team of experts who are experts in financial crime, cybersecurity, and regulatory compliance. I'm Alison Donnelly, and I am the director of the regulatory compliance section for payments and a payments regulation specialist. I'm very pleased to be joined today by Nick Gumley, our associate director in cybersecurity, and I'll ask Nick Gumley to introduce himself first.
Thanks, Alison, and hi everybody. Yeah, my name is Nick Gumley. I'm an associate director at FSCom, leading the cyber practice in the business. I've got a background in IT, information and cybersecurity, gained in both industry and consulting roles across a variety of sectors and industries, and also with a focus on financial services. And I'll introduce my colleague Nick Wright now.
Hey everyone, I'm a senior manager within the payments team. I joined FSCom about 6 months ago after around 10 years in in-house roles working in risk and compliance. Prior to that, I worked for Accenture and KPMG as a consultant, but with a focus on outsourcing, which had obviously an important operational resilience component to it.
Thanks,
I'll pass
Nick.
Back. Thank you.
Yes, so now we're going to move into for the agenda for the presentation today, which is obviously about operational resilience in your business. We thought it was probably worth mentioning and giving a bit of background to this and going through some of what's occurred previously. So this operational resilience has been a subject that's been under discussion for a reasonable period of time. Obviously, with the publication of DP 18.4 in 2018, publication of the FCA policy statement in March of this year, and the consultation paper that occurred in 2019, there's been a relatively quick move between conception or inception of the regulation around operational resilience to actually it moving to be a regulation that we need to comply with by March 2022 and then full compliance by March 2025. So if we look at operational resilience, it's something that we've considered in business for some time, but I think this process culminating in the policy statement of March this year has just put it into a wider focus across the business. Elements that were probably thought of as separate functions within the business and how you meet your operational resilience requirements are now being brought together under this regulation. And it's also worth stating, I think, that in comparison to other EU directives and regulations, operational resilience has come about a little bit more quickly. Good example of that is GDPR, which took 6 years from inception to becoming law in 2018, and another one called the Network and Information Systems Regulations also took 5 years from inception to becoming law. So I think operational resilience is a little bit more rapid than that.
Thanks, Dick. And just to add on this, obviously this timeline is very much focused on the UK regulatory environment. We're very much sensitive to the fact that there are people dialing in from Ireland as well. Obviously, the EBA guidelines back in November 2019 have formed a key basis for a lot of what's followed. They themselves obviously came out of the PSD2 guidance around security risk. And we are seeing a significant movement, including consultation paper 140 with the CBI, to not only look at operational resilience in more detail, but actually replicate a lot of what's being done by the Bank of England and the FCA. So over the course of this webinar, I'll be making sure that I point out where I see there to be differences between the CBI's revised approach and what the FCA is itself putting into place.
Thanks, Nick. I think you were going to cover some of the intended outcomes for us as well.
Yeah, we had a chat about this. One of the things, having worked in in-house roles as a compliance manager, is always to make sure that people understand the why, not just the regulator told us to, but to try and understand a little bit more about the intended outcomes that the regulator has stated that it is looking to get from this exercise. I think the first one to make note of is just around the fact that operational resilience becomes core to firm strategic objectives. This is not just about supporting strategic objectives, but also informing the strategic goals of the firm to keep ultimately the consumer, the customer in mind. Another key development as well, and this has been a recurring theme over the last few years, is just acknowledging the fact that disruption is going to be inevitable. And I think this is a key theme within this webinar, to say this isn't just about responding to disruption, it's also looking to try and avoid disruption as well. So it's not just looking at business continuity measures, but also looking at the BAU environment and saying, what can we do within that environment to shore up the resources that are ultimately providing important business services to our customers and to the wider market. Thirdly, and a very popular one, is just to make sure that, yeah, as a result of this exercise, the resourcing and the support that's required to deliver against these operational resilience requirements are actually realistic and can be achieved largely through an investment in this area to make sure that where vulnerabilities are identified and where issues occur and need to be addressed, that they're avoided going forward. Fourthly, it's a matter of testing and demonstrating the ability to respond and recover to disruptions. Now, obviously, there's a significant overlap here with what you may have already been doing around business continuity. But again, it's an important part of this, is to see operational resilience as this very holistic framework that looks at not just business continuity, but the incidents and ultimately all the different parts that go into delivering a service. And then finally, although certainly not least, is to ensure that boards have a robust framework to assess their operational resilience, particularly the CBI. We'll talk about the importance of board and senior management oversight of this area. This is no longer left to the techies to work out in a dark room. This is something that needs to go to the top of the organisation. And a key output of this exercise is a self-assessment document that sets out the framework, but also gives a sense of where some of the key challenges may be in making sure that the firm becomes increasingly operational resilient.
And I think Yeah, thanks, Nick. I think it's worth emphasising point five that you can see on the screen, which is about engaging with your board and getting board support throughout this process. It's going to be a theme that we touch on a number of the slides as we move through the presentation. So bear that in mind. It's really worth engaging with your senior leadership teams to get them on board with operational resilience. Okay, so the initial deadline of March 31st, 2022, what do we need to have done by that point? So we need to have identified our important business services, set impact tolerances for maximum tolerable disruption, mapped the resources supporting each important business service in terms of people, process, technology, facilities, and information. And we need to have carried out testing to ensure that the important business services have been identified correctly and the impact tolerances have been calibrated appropriately. Operational resilience, I think, as a definition, it's an organization's ability to detect, prevent, respond to, and recover and learn from operational disruptions that may impact the delivery of an important business or economic function. And it's how the business brings together all of that operational knowledge and know-how to ensure that you can remain resilient. And the final point there about identifying any vulnerabilities in their operational resilience, that's really key for the March 22 milestone. You don't need to have done this in full by March 2022. but you do need to have identified any vulnerabilities in your operational resilience and conducted some mapping and some identification of your important business services.
Just one thing to add from me, just in relation to how this ties back to the CBI's consultation paper from earlier this year. I think this really is where the CBI is looking at the first pillar, which is to identify and prepare. It's to go through this robust exercise to really pull apart your business, the services you're providing to your clients, as well as to the wider market, and understand the implications of those. So yeah, I think there's a clear tie in here, and obviously the CBI has two more pillars which we'll talk about later on.
Thanks. So what are the challenges of operational resilience? I think the main challenge, as with all challenges in a business, any change that you introduce to that business is going to raise challenges. There are challenges that need to be considered. For example, resources, really important. Do you have the right resources, or do you have the resources to support an operational resilience project or program that's going to take you from where we are currently up to 2022 and then on to 2025? Have you got the skills within your business that can support that project, those projects and that program of work? You need to align your internal risk management systems, business continuity, cyber and information security, operational risk and vendor risk management. So to do all of that, you're going to need people that have got a granular understanding of your business. They need internal business knowledge. You need to know what your products and services are, what the supporting processes are, and the underlying technology and infrastructure that supports that. The fourth point that we can see, supply chain. Again, that's another theme that we're going to come to throughout the presentation. It's really important that you understand how your supply chain and what you outsource to that supply chain affects your operational resilience. So please, again, bear that in mind throughout the session. That operational resilience must be considered from your business, but also from your supply chain and how they can support you. And again, I don't want to scare everybody, but we've got just over 5 months left to the March 2022 milestone. So what are you doing about preparing? Have you started some of the key projects and work streams to identify your important business services and do your mapping? So it's worth bearing that in mind.
As I mentioned earlier, I've got a strong focus on outsourcing, and obviously the EBA guidelines on outsourcing already cover a number of the topics and the themes that are included within this. One example of where outsourcing could come into play, or indeed other key third parties, is where you go through this exercise, identify that an impact tolerance is at a certain level, and then you revisit your contracts to find that actually you're not going to be ever able to get that service from your outsourcing or third-party provider. So it's just an example of where your outsourcing, it isn't just the technical side of it, but it's also saying, well, if we've determined that this is going to become a problem for our customers at this point in time, making sure that you have all of those dependencies in place to make sure that you can deliver to those timeframes.
Okay, thanks, Nick. So what are the next steps? We know what we've got to do at a high level. We know, or we understand, some of the challenges that's going to be created because of that. So what do we need to do practically? What are our next steps? Identify the program sponsor. As I've said, that's really important. You need to have someone from the board who is responsible for this and sponsor your program. It's likely to be the CEO, the CFO, COO or the CRO, somebody from the C-suite who's got visibility, authority across the business, has a presence on the board and can take executive action where required. This is ultimately potentially going to need to bang a few heads together to get people to actually come together in a room and sort out operational resilience. So you do need that executive level sponsorship. You're going to need to identify a project manager and any independent support that you might need. We understand not every business, due to scale and size, not every business has got a PMO function. So you might want to consider how you can use third parties, independent consultants, to help you to move through your operational resilience program. And that project management role is absolutely critical as we see it, because that will be the view, the top level view that can draw together all of the business functions and all of the activity that will be going on in the business to meet operational resilience. You need a view from above that can harness all of that output and ensure that the project is moving forward as it should, and be able to ask the key questions across your business and get them and get the answers brought together to support the operational resilience requirements. Key stakeholders, they're likely to be the heads of function, your technology subject matter experts, business operations subject matter experts, procurement team, the legal team, your MLRO, risk management professionals, information security. All aspects of your business, as we've said, will be involved in your solution to operational resilience. And I think the key point, the key for this slide is, again, as I said before, how much of a business priority is this at the moment? Have you identified the right resources to complete the project? Have you got the right support in place to support that team? Have they got the availability to actually deliver this operational resilience project for the milestone in 2022 and then beyond to 2025? And is this getting the board level scrutiny in your business? Much of the output, as Nick talked about with the self-assessment document, much of the output will need to be approved by your board. So as I said before, it's a good idea to get their support early on.
And just to add to this 2025 deadline, I think, yeah, clearly it's going to take some time to understand and prove what the firm has in place. That's really what the period up to 2025 is for, although the FCA is very, very keen to have that all proven well before that deadline. As a result, it could be useful in keeping the project team together beyond that March 31st deadline of next year, not least because you retain the knowledge and the momentum in doing so. So I think it would be fair to say that certainly plans to go into Q2 with this, not just as a wash up for the framework, but also to understand exactly how your business is performing against these impact tolerances as soon as possible.
So over to you now. We've asked three statements, or presented three statements on this slide. So we're going to ask you to give us your answer, or choose which one of those statements best reflects your business at the moment, and we'll give you a couple of minutes to do that.
So we're asking you to vote on what statement, which of these statements best reflects where your business is at the moment. We're recognising that this is that some of you are from firms in Ireland who don't have a March 22 milestone as yet, but of course the central bank are consulting and pulling together their guidance, and it's likely that they're going to expect a fairly swift implementation period to keep up with the expectations of the bigger deadline. Please do add your vote now. And over half of you have voted. We'll just give you a second more to hit that button, and then we'll bring the responses together. Okay, thank you. So we can see here that nobody is set already ready for the March 22 milestone. At least a good deal of progress has been made, although it's at a third of firms have not yet started planning for the operational resilience piece. So some work to be done still. Over to you, Nick.
Thanks, Alison. And maybe that's something that we can pick up in the Q&A at the end. Okay, so what is a business service? Putting this presentation together, we've thought about how we can articulate the process that we need to go through to gain operational resilience in our business. We need to understand the services, or the service that you deliver to a customer, whether that's an individual or a business. and how that is actually achieved through the functions of your business. The key functions, or the resources, as the FCA calls them, that you can see at the bottom of the screen have been defined: people, process, technology, facilities, and information. But I think a business service just should be considered anything that you provide to a customer or market participant, and one that they recognize as a product or service. It is the end product that the business creates and delivers to the consumer. So if we know what our business services are, then we can apply the thinking later on to determine if that's an important business service. Crucially, the FCA doesn't require firms to identify all business services, but we propose that you do identify all business services, because you need to apply the thinking to determine if that business service is important or not. And you can't do that unless you have captured and understood what your business services are. You will also need to demonstrate that process as you do your self-assessment document. So as I said, the service delivery will be made up of the functions that we can see: people, process, technology, facilities, and information. And I do keep coming back to that, which is why I keep stating it. They're really important to understand, because they're the functions of the business and the resources as the FCA has defined them that will support the delivery of a service and will require to be operationally resilient. This is also why on the previous slide we talked about getting a granular understanding of your business. You need people that are fully up to speed with what goes on from an operational point of view within your business, because you need that input and that viewpoint of the people that are actually doing the work in the various functions that support your service delivery to your customers. And again, before we move on to important business services, we must be clear that we have captured all of our business services. And I know it's difficult to get your tongue and your head around business services and important business services, but unless we can identify all of our business services, we won't be able to then identify which are our important ones.
Just something to add on this one. The FCA very much is keen for us to think about outsourcing and third-party vendors within these five functions or resources. As I mentioned earlier, the CBI calls out third-party service providers separately, maybe to align it, to align the thinking better to the EBA guidelines on outsourcing and the exercise that a lot of firms have inevitably gone through in relation to that. But also, I think, just to emphasize the need to think about the external influences, the external areas where there may be less control over the business to deliver against those business services. One other thing to note as well, just from a regulatory point of view, is the FCA very helpfully in policy statement 21.3 from earlier this year provides as an example of an EMI as firm A. Obviously within the paper, you can read through the journey and how the FCA expects the different requirements to apply to that firm. But thinking about what is ultimately an important business service, they take the example of the provision of a multi-currency e-wallet account as a single business service. So obviously users can initiate electronic payment transactions from that account, but it's ultimately the account as a service that they're thinking about as an example of how you would break down your business into those business services.
Thanks, Nick. So as we said, we've identified our business services. We now need to determine which are our important business services. And I'll read out the statements, so bear with me. An important business service is a service provided by a firm or by another person on behalf of the firm to one or more clients of the firm, which, if disrupted, could cause intolerable levels of harm or pose a risk to the soundness, stability, or resilience of financial systems. So to break that down and understand what we need to do to identify an important business service, or an IBS as I keep referring to it, you need to document your business services, and as we said, apply your critical thinking to determine if that service is important. So to do this, we must understand the harm to consumers and apply a test of that product or service through the lens of a customer. Will the user of the service, what will they think, feel and do if that service is disrupted? Will failure of the service cause intolerable harm to one or more of my clients? If our service was taken offline or our business was taken offline, would it impact the soundness, stability or resilience of the financial system? Is there a risk to organisational viability? The very existence of the organisation could be at risk if the service fails for a significant period of time. And is there a third party or fourth party that's critical to the delivery of my service? And am I managing that process correctly? I think for simple business models, this should be a relatively straightforward exercise. Once you've identified your services, it should be relatively straightforward to identify your important business services. But for more complex firms, I think this will require, as we said, a really detailed understanding of your products and services and your business. And you're going to need time from now to do that analysis to be ready for March 2022 and beyond to 25. So I think things to consider as part of your analysis, the scale of service delivery failure is obviously important. The impact of the loss of that service to the customer, the impact of the loss of the service and the potential disruption to the market. You need to understand your customers and develop appropriate metrics and indicators to measure the point beyond which the impact of failure becomes intolerable. And this we'll touch on in a later slide when we talk about impact tolerances. Your important business services need to be assessed through the external lens and not solely on an internal perception of what you see as important within your business. It has to be done from a harm to the market or harm to my customer, harm to financial stability or harm to the firm's ability to continue business operations. On a practical level and post March 2022, important business services should be reviewed annually against changes in the business. So you only need to document any significant changes or any material changes to your business operations. Have you introduced a new service or a method of processing? Have you introduced a new third party or outsourcing agreement? Have you taken on a significant number of new customers and therefore increase the size and the scale or the complexity of your business significantly? You need to identify those important business services proportionally and in the context of their size and complexity, and ensure that ownership and accountability for those services is well defined within your business. The statement also talks about disruption. So what are the key aspects of disruption across those five resources that the FCA has defined? People, process, technology, facilities, and information. So a people disruption could be around single points of failure. Are there key individuals in your business that have roles which are standalone but are fundamental to operations of a business? Do they have deputies? Has it been thought through who will deputize and ensure that the continuity of that service can remain? Have you looked at the processes that are executed to ensure that a service is maintained? And has the failure of one of those processes been assessed? Obviously, the underlying technology that supports all of your business is crucial to operational resilience. The facilities that support the business, the business premises themselves, and then the information, which are the aspects of your business that's written down, standard operating procedures, the details of your customers, your CRM system, for example.
Nick, again, I was going to say, good, maybe just a chance for me to jump in, just to mention anybody's worked with me before, but just to provide a little bit of insight. I love breaking concepts up into their constituent parts. And I think this slide is very helpful in doing that. But I think a key way of reading this is actually to take out that line around disruption and actually reading it as BAU. And I think what we see is a lot of the themes coming through from the FCA, including its consultation paper on the new consumer duty, really playing out here. What we're seeing here is just this concept that ultimately, a firm is providing services to customers, and it's part of providing that service is to make sure that there isn't harm to customers, that the customers are able to do what they want to do and they do it in the right way. And I think that's a key part of the operational resilience, is they're not just responding to when things go wrong and putting those business continuity plans in place and then invoking them when it's required, but also to just recognize that in delivering that service to clients and to customers, there's continually this question of how do we make things resilient? How do we avoid ever getting to the point where we are thinking about business continuity? We're actually making that core service resilient. And as I say, I think that's just a really important theme that comes up with the FCA, but also with the Central Bank of Ireland. We were talking about that time frame and the evolution of operational resilience. Technically, what's the current strategic plan for the Central Bank of Ireland for the 2019-2020-2021 period, but defined back at the end of 2018, put operational resilience effectively as its number one theme that it was focusing on. The FCA for many years, including this year, has put a big focus on operational resilience as well. So I think this isn't an exercise in and of itself, and it's not just an exercise looking at how this ties into your PSD2 major incident reporting or your current business continuity arrangements. This is about how the firm ultimately goes to market and how it sets its strategic objectives from this point forward. Sorry, Nick. Back to you.
No problem. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate this slide is pretty busy, so we'll give a recap. So we've identified our business services. We've determined which of those are our important business services, and we've understood some of the disruption that we might arise that will affect our operational resilience. So we now must set what was called the impact tolerances. Now, the impact tolerance is the state which, if we can operate inside, will pose a manageable level of risk disruption to the delivery of the service. Beyond that point, it will become intolerable. So, and beyond the point of maximum tolerable disruption, further degradation of the business service may cause harm to one or more of my clients or pose a risk to the market. So, appreciate that's a mouthful and a handful that you've got to do in your business, but you've got to consider each important business services identified in the previous steps and assess them on assess the scale of impact over time. The metric that the FCA always comes back to is the impact tolerance should be a measurement over time, but it should be expressed in terms of a statement. Definitions of impact tolerance statements or examples of impact tolerance statements have been provided, and you can look some of those up. But it's likely to be a textual a response or an outcome that's expressed in a paragraph as to what we can expect our impact tolerance to be for that particular service. I think a key point on this one is don't rely on predefined metrics and statements that exist in your business continuity planning. Obviously, most firms will have documented all of their BCP. There might be incident response playbooks and templates also, but don't rely on those solely and bring those into the project as you look at operational resilience as a whole. And again, key point here is about plausible scenarios. You need to think about what is a plausible disruption or a plausible scenario for the service to be taken offline. So think through what the impact of the service to my customer is, and then understand a plausible scenario of how that may be affected when you take that service away from the customer. Impact tolerance. Sorry, Nick, go on.
Yeah, go on. I'll leave you. I'll jump in later.
So impact tolerances should be set based on a single disruption rather than an aggregation of disruptions. And again, I wanted to point out that vulnerable customers, which is a question that we get asked quite a lot, so the FCA states that firms are not required to set specific impact tolerances for vulnerable customers, and that they should be considered through the process, the normal process that you would go through in identifying your important business services. Sorry, Nick, go ahead.
No, fine. I was just going to add that obviously a number of these concepts, including the the term severe but plausible scenarios have been around for a little while through the evolution of these operational resilience papers, and we certainly have seen them elsewhere. One key thing, and this did come up a little while ago, even within discussion paper, the 18.4 back in 2018, there was an acknowledgement that really what we were doing here was moving from a system-oriented or a system-led view of operational resilience and business continuity, and actually flipping it on its head and saying it's actually the service that is the impact to the customer that really is our focus here. So, you know, whilst a lot of these terms and phrases are going to be quite familiar to us, it's just really switching our thinking, our perspective on its head to say, well, let's think about, you know, think about the service and think about what goes into it. Obviously, if there's significant redundancy within the technology space, you know, the processes are proven to be incredibly robust, brilliant. They're all things that are going to ultimately help us get to where we need to. But I think at this point in time, hopefully a lot of this will be familiar, as I say, it's just through a different lens.
I think just before we move on as well, just wanted to point out a last bullet point again. As I said, we'll keep coming back to it. Your impact tolerances will need to be approved by the senior leadership. So again, get board support. Mapping, as part of the important business service identification and to complete your self-assessment documentation, you need to map all of the important business services in terms of the people, process, technology, facilities, and information. So again, how do we go about doing that mapping? We need to conduct a discovery exercise against the services that we've identified to understand what systems, users, data, supporting infrastructure, internal processes, etc., all go in to support the services that you deliver to your customers. And the mapping must document those services in the terms of the functions or resources that we've got on the screen. A key point here is to utilize any mapping that exists within the business. Now, most businesses will already have mapping from other business process improvement projects, for example. The existing business continuity tasks and planning documentation that you're likely to have. If you are required to be PCI DSS compliant, mapping will have occurred to identify what your cardholder data environment is, for example. And for GDPR, likely mapping occur to understand the data flows and capture of personally identifiable information as part of that process. And the final one there is there might have been some planning and mapping done as part of your response to the COVID-19 pandemic. So bring all of the existing material that you've got that has mapped business processes, bring all of that together and understand how it can support your operational resilience. The goal of the mapping is to ensure everything required to deliver, maintain, or support of these services is determined and understood.
So, just Nick, I know you mentioned you covered these five resources, these four, five functions off previously, but just to provide a slightly different angle and then view on these, speaking a little bit more kind of from a regulatory perspective, I think, you know, when we look at people, it's not just the people who are responsible for the decision making and then implementing the processes and technology, but it's also thinking about those who monitor the controls that we're seeing elsewhere as well. So it's not just about the people who are actually acting upon this, it's actually the people who can then oversee all the resources that are required to provide that business service. I think when it comes to process, it's also important to think carefully about how processes and technology are inevitably interdependent, and where, you know, as a business, you may substitute one for the other. You know, bringing in manual processes, moving towards more automated technology. You know, when those things occur, then they're obviously going to have an impact on your ability to provide the business service. You know, normally to improve it, right? But ultimately, there could be other impacts as well. When it comes to technology, it's not just the systems, but also the underlying architecture. This is something that has really been a focus in the EBA guidelines on outsourcing, where they put this big primacy on outsourcing of what were previously data centers to the cloud. When talking about facilities, office locations are a key element. And I think we may talk further down the line about the FCA's recent guidance around remote and hybrid working. But there are also other considerations, things like the production of cards. All these things would fall under the facilities resource. And then finally, information is anything, as I think Nick covered off well earlier, anything that the firm is requires from a data or information perspective to deliver the service, not just the protection of data, but also all the other data that goes into providing the service that is expected by the client. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks. Sorry, I was on mute. So important, the next phase of what we've got to do is testing. Testing or full testing of your important business services does not need to be done by March 2022 and can be completed between 2022 and 2025. You do, however, need to complete testing to a sufficient depth to allow you to identify your important business services and then set the relevant impact tolerances for maximum tolerable disruption. So that's really important to know. So you don't have to do full testing between now and March 2022. Beyond March 2022, testing should be of sufficient depth to maintain business operations within the impact tolerance of each important business service. And any changes to business operations should be considered in the annual review and then tested appropriately. Don't just test the important business services that you're confident you can remain inside the impact tolerance for. Document and test all of your important business services, because that will need to be validated and signed off by the board in your self-assessment document. Other considerations to take into account, really important, is communications. The FCA does talk in some detail in 21.3 about your communications and ensuring that internal and external communications are well thought through and considered in the business. Obviously, internal communications are likely to be different to external communications. Have you got a RACI matrix that covers who's going to manage internal versus external communications? Is there pre-built material that can be drawn upon? I'm sure there's instant response playbooks and plans, as there are business continuity playbooks and plans that will require media approaches and statements to be given. So ensure that all of that is documented and look into what has already been developed within the business to make sure that you're not covering work that has already been completed. But do think about the communications as an important aspect of your operational resilience. And finally, about awareness, you need to train the people that have an important role within your operational resilience project or program. You need to identify who your high-risk personnel that support those important business services are, and make sure that they are trained and understand their role and responsibility within operational resilience. You need to train all of your staff. Information security has become or security awareness as part of information security has become a prominent part of our annual assessments, and ensuring that the firms and our staff are fully up to speed with information security. I think that remains the same for operational resilience. We need to ensure that all of our business understand their role and responsibilities in maintaining operational resilience and ensuring that we can deliver the services to our customers.
Yeah, just to repeat an off-use theme within this webinar, on the communication side, a lot of this is going to be developing what you already have in place. Yeah, the concept of making sure that the right people internally aware when things go wrong, and ultimately the regulator is aware as well. I think topics that have been prevalent in a lot of recent papers, again, talking about the EBA guidelines on outsourcing, EBA guidelines on ICT and security risk as well. So yeah, a lot of this should help. That should be good starting points to develop what you need to show that you are going to be operationally resilient going forward.
Okay, thanks, Nick. And just conscious of time, so we've got another quick poll for you. So if I could give you 30 seconds to have a read of the question or statement on the screen and then give us your answers, we'd appreciate it. Thank you.
So the question is, given what we've learned about operational resilience, my firm either has the skills to meet operational resilience obligations internally or will require independent support to meet obligations. Please do cast your vote now. And the votes are just coming in, so we'll just give it a second longer. Okay, let's call it there because we've got loads of good questions to come to. Thank you. So we can see that the majority feel that they have the skills to meet operational resilience obligations in-house, which is great, but some are feeling that they may well need to bring in some independent support. Over to you, Nick.
Thanks, Alison. So finally, just before we move to Q&A, the key takeaways. Now, I appreciate there's a lot of detail, there's a lot of content that we've gone through. I think the key takeaways for me, use the output generated from each stage of the process that you've gone through to document your self-assessment. You don't need to do anything outside of that because the process that you will have gone through to identify your business services, important business services, done your mapping, set your impact tolerances, and then done your testing needs to be captured and it needs to be structured into your self-assessment. Have a view that looks at what you are doing through the lens of your customer. And again, the last point, gain board level support and gain that early because the board will be crucial in signing this off and approving your operational resilience plans. Anything from you, Nick?
No, I think these are the three takeaways in terms of what the output is, you know, how this changes one's perspective. But as we said all along, it's important to get that senior level support and buy-in, not least to make sure that people are aware of where the firm sits in its operational resilience journey, but also to make sure that the resources are going to be put in place to make sure that the firm gets to where it needs to get to.
Thanks, Nick. And now over to you. So Q&A, has anyone got any questions?
There are some good questions in, Nick and Nick. I think reflecting hopefully that you've done a great job in explaining the concepts. And as the previous poll has indicated, you know, clearly the knowledge to do this work comes from inside a business, but there are some questions just in terms of clarity on some of the key points that you've mentioned. So the first question is, what is the difference of this operational resilience piece with the business continuity plan and the IT security policy? As far as I understand, person writes, the important business services and the gap analysis and remedial actions have been disclosed already in those various documents.
Yeah, great questions. I mean, obviously on the ICT and the security side, that the key focus there is really around the technology and also the protection of information. Two of the five resources that are the focus of this operational resilience paper. Obviously, there are three other resources that we look at as well, and you know they're all interdependent, they're all interchangeable to a greater or lesser extent. But ultimately, thinking about ICT and security risk, that the focus there has really been around the technology and around the information. With regards to BCP, and it's a question that's come up a lot. The way I see this is that it's not just looking at BCP, but also BAU. Yeah, obviously, as the FCA itself acknowledges, disruption is inevitable, but it's making sure that everything is in place from a BAU perspective that you don't even need to invoke your BCP plans, or when you do, they're relatively straightforward because you know how to bring the service back in within tolerance or never to have exceeded that tolerance in the first place. So the way I would see this is, yeah, obviously BCP is a key part of this, but that's the end. It's really that the meat of this is around making sure that your day-to-day service is as resilient as it can be to avoid that impact to consumers and potentially to the wider market.
Which, to take Nick's point there, and thanks for that, Nick, I think is to look at it through the lens of the customer again. How is what we are doing going to deliver the service to the customer? Business continuity and information security operate, they're not new things. People have been doing that for a while, but I think operational resilience just widens all of those concepts across the five resources that Nick talked about. So it needs to be not given to IT as a task to complete, which is what used to happen with business continuity, for example. So it needs to be thought through from a business-wide approach and not just a technology or technical approach to operational resilience.
Thanks. The next question is going back to the point about IBS, which is not irritable bowel syndrome in this, although it might give you it. It's about important business services. If your firm provides related and unrelated payment services, money remittance, FX, acquiring, for example, are important business services the type of service itself or minor components within each service the partner used to service various payment corridors?
That's one question. Okay, so I'll have a go answering that again. The FCA has given some guidance in terms of what it understands to be a business service within PS21.3. It wasn't necessarily there in CP 1932, which is a consultation paper that was focused on. It seemed more on non-EMI, non-PI organisations. But Firm A is very much there as that test as to what a business service is, and then how do all these requirements apply to that particular firm or to that business service. So just going back to that, the focus of the FCA was on the offering of a multi-currency wallet. So is that, would a firm see that as that multi-currency e-wallet account as a product within its overall service? I think we could get into the nomenclature in far too much detail, but I think that it's ultimately the account that's the service that we're looking at here. What goes into ensuring that account is available to customers, that account is resilient. If people want to access that account, if they want to take actions off the back of having that account, that's ultimately all that's coming into play here when we're thinking about that business service. I'm not sure if that answers it perfectly, but I would say that it isn't as simple as just going, we provide payment service, a regulated payment service, an unregulated payment service, and then e-money service. It has to be a level below that.
Thank you, that's great. You did mention intolerable harm. The next question here is, can you perhaps elaborate a little bit more about how you define intolerable harm?
Feels like a politician's answer to go. That's probably best for the firm to decide. But I think we've very much intentionally not just taken the Firm A example within the policy statement and just run through that and played it out. But there are some good examples there, I think, in terms of what intolerable harm means in that particular example they give around that multi-currency e-wallet not being available. They take a number of different factors and said, based on the number of users that we have, based on substitutability for this service, in this particular example, we think that 2 hours is probably the right level of impact tolerance here. If users couldn't have this service for 2 hours, that's when they would start experiencing harm. So the answer isn't just read the policy statement, Firm A, and that'll give you everything you need. But I do think it does provide some really useful detail in thinking about how to apply a real life example to these requirements.
And I suppose that's where the work has to be done by the firm to be able to build their own concept of that, and obviously based in their own case. If a customer is heavily reliant on the service that's given, clearly they can't do without it for as long. But if it's something that's that there are alternatives, or perhaps maybe we could even suggest if it was an account for use by children, for example, perhaps the intolerable harm wait would, the time would be a bit longer, because hopefully they'll have parents who have cards and money and cash and all the rest. Whereas if it's somebody's, an account somebody's using for their day-to-day living expenses, actually, as we all know from outages, that can be seriously difficult for individuals.
Yeah, and having worked for a couple of inquirers, obviously, not trying to get into too much detail, but for a couple of inquirers, if point of sale systems go down in a supermarket, then that, supermarket being one example, but yeah, if those points of sale systems go down within a shop or other environment, and that's going to have an impact to the customer, then that's a really good litmus test to go, well, yeah, how long could that point of sale terminal be down for before it's really starting to cause harm to customers? So yeah, that's another one where you can really probably imagine that very much in being brought to life as a customer oneself. And to see how that may impact your business service.
I'm going to ask one last question, I'm afraid, because we've only got a few more minutes before one. And so this one hopefully can be answered relatively briefly. Does the regime replace the requirement to implement and test disaster recovery plans, especially when the requirement to produce a business impact analysis, which requires us to identify important services and set various tolerances? There seems to be considerable degree of overlap. So is one replacing the other?
My understanding, it won't replace the your other obligations or your other commitments, but because you are doing work in one area, that will support what you can do from an operational resilience point of view. Sorry, Nicola.
No, I was going to say the same thing. I think, I mean, ultimately operational resilience is that framework in which all these different components, including disaster recovery, sit. So I don't think they necessarily replace. I think there will be the opportunity to reuse a lot of what's gone before. And when we've looked at this for some of our clients, we have noticed that it's bringing in a lot of what's been brought before and then trying to amalgamate that. And as they then just look at it through a different lens. So that's a very simple way of describing the practical process around all this.
Nick, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time, and to our attendees, very much appreciate your questions and your listening. Please do get in touch with us directly if you've any further questions. For those whose questions we haven't been able to answer on this session, we will follow up separately and carry on the conversation. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.